The greatest trick the devil ever pulled was convincing the world he didn't exist.
I saw a pale horse,
the beast.
We're told in the book of Revelation.
This is not a human child.
Isn't an angel?
Satan! Armageddon is almost upon us.
Order the use of nuclear weapons.
The world is a fine place and worth fighting for.
From one end of the world to the other, I will oppose you.
Welcome to the end of the world.
Wrestling not against flesh and blood, but against powers and principalities. This is PID Radio.
From the beautiful Missouri Ozarks, I'm Derek Gilbert.
I'm Sharon Gilbert, and welcome to our humble bunker, everybody. We are speaking from the Skywatch TV audio booths, so this is a new spot.
Yeah, Tom Horn was very gracious in... Not only creating offices for us here, but also granting us a booth where we could set up and produce PID Radio. So
yeah, isn't that nice?
Absolutely. This is pretty sweet.
He treats us really well.
Yeah, it's almost like he likes us or something. we're very blessed.
I think
to be
he's
here.
Scared of Sam.
That's it. Sam Baird is giving the Elvis snarl.
Sam T. Dachshund is with us, by the way, this morning, and it's a joy. But we are going to be moving again.
Yes.
This time just to another house that's about, maybe 10 minutes away from where we are right now.
Right. It's been I guess in the grand scheme of things, it's not really been that long a time.
2 months. We've been here 2 months.
Yeah. But that seems to be the speed at which real estate transactions are taking place nowadays. I kind of got used to it back in the day when I sold real estate, which was, 20 years ago now. But we could generally get loans turned around in 3 to 4 weeks. And in fact, when we bought our home in Illinois 4 years ago.
Turned around in 3 weeks.
Yeah, it was 3 weeks. And so we were hoping to use the same lender again. But unfortunately, the home and the property that we decided was the one where we would like to set up and could potentially be our final home, if God wills it that way.
I hope it is.
Is a manufactured home. Now it's constructed extremely well. It's the exterior walls are framed with 2x6 mm-hmm. lumber instead of 2x4, and
yeah.
it's not going anywhere.
It's on a footered foundation.
Yeah, permanently foundation. Full width concrete, poured concrete foundation, and it's solid. It is solid, and yet
it's got an attached 2-car garage.
Yeah, but lenders are skittish. So. Yeah. That plus apparently the FHA is getting a little more persnickety.
So it's been a
technical
trail.
Term. Yeah, but anyway, in the grand scheme of things, it hasn't really been that long. It just feels like it because it seems like every couple of days there was another list. Okay, now...
We need this blood sample, first child.
I figured out what the problem is. The loan underwriter is one of the knights of me. Bring us a shrubbery. So anyway, we're through that, and we appreciate your prayers and support. And it looks like that is close to completion. And
praise God.
Yeah. So this is going to be an interesting experience for me because I was born and raised in Chicago and have lived in Chicago and Philadelphia and St. Louis for a good portion of my life. And so I'm used to a big city setting, but I find I'm a lot more relaxed and comfortable in a small community. And this community that we're moving to is actually unincorporated, and it's basically one other house plus ours, the church, the volunteer fire department, and a gas station.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, pretty much. That's pretty much it. It's 10 acres, a nice house, a big 30x40,
shop,
something
yeah.
like that shop.
A pole barn, I guess.
They call them pole barns, but it just looks like a big garage.
Yeah.
It's pretty awesome. The Lord is providing, and we're curious to see where he's going to lead with this, because since he has led us to this property, there may be something he has in mind for that garage, that big building.
Well, absolutely. Yeah. That and this sounds like a lot. And having come from Illinois, I'm thinking, okay, people who aren't familiar with property values here in the Ozarks think, well, how much are the Gilberts spending on this place?
But not much.
It's $10,000 less than what we just sold our house for in a subdivision in a small town in East Central Illinois. So
on about a quarter of an acre.
Yeah. On a quarter of an acre. So, the county that we left in Illinois was considered one of the least expensive counties in the state of Illinois. And yet the property taxes here are going to be 20% of what we were paying there.
Yeah.
So it's,
The Lord has taken us to a place that I believe we're going to be more self-sufficient.
Yes.
We're on a septic system there, on a well, on well
have
water.
Our own well.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah. And the well, which really surprised our inspector, is, here, I guess the reputation is that the water is very hard, lots of dissolved minerals in the water. And yet, couldn't see any evidence of calcification on any of the faucets or anything at this place. So it's, and it's clean. So, again, this is going to be a new experience for me, but I really feel like this is where
I want to get a cow and a couple of chickens just to see you, or even just go to a neighbor's place and have you milk a cow. I think that would be an experience that we should put on Skywatch TV.
Yeah, it's one that my mother, who was raised on a farm in the middle of North Dakota, is also very eager to see. Mom thinks it's hysterical that I made it to the age of 50 before I learned what silage was. But you know, that's her fault. She's the one who decided to move to Chicago.
Yeah, exactly.
Before I was born. So anyway, it's a very interesting time, and we're again just tremendously thankful to be here. And the Lord is really opened some doors here.
Going to move to the first story I wanted to news article I want to discuss, and that has to do with these cows.
Oh, okay. We have cow.
Here's the article, and I found this at the Daily Mail Online, which sadly is where I find a lot of stuff. I say sadly because there's so much pornography at that site.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting, though. The other night, Steve Quayle was just in town because he and Tom Horner are very good friends. And we went out to dinner with Chris Putnam, who was mm-hmm. also here. And Steve mentioned that he gets a lot of the news that he reports on from the Daily Mail.
Well, whoever's, you know, scouring the internet and all the news media sites for stories, they tend to put stuff up there that attracts my attention anyway.
Yeah, they've got better coverage of the U.S. than most.
They do.
Than the Washington Post, the New York Times, most domestic sources.
Yeah. I
mean, the Daily Mail and the Telegraph actually had better U.S. coverage than the American papers.
So anyway, this story. Here is the headline. Robotic cow sperm travel 30% faster after receiving a shot of caffeine.
Robotic cow sperm.
Yes. Okay, here's what they did. Researchers took cow sperm, bovine sperm. It would actually be bull.
Bull sperm. Yeah, I was going to say, does the headline actually say cow sperm?
It says cow sperm. Yes, it does. It does. A cow is the female.
See, now I'm from Chicago.
A bull is the male.
Even I knew that.
Yes.
So.
Anyway, this bovine sperm is put into a petri dish or a container that has lots and lots of nanotubules in it made out of metals. So gold or silver nanotubules that are like, think of them as little bitty traps, mm-hmm. tiny traps that the sperm, they always just want to go forward. That's all they know.
Like little roach
swim.
Motels.
Sort of.
They check in, they don't check out.
But think of them as cars.
Yeah.
Okay. So they're getting into these little cars that are nanotubules, and the nanotubule is used, the metal is used because the scientists want to direct the direction. They want to drive the sperm, so to speak, using magnets. Okay?
Interesting.
The sperm are going to go at their own pace, regardless of them. The magnet only tells them turn left, turn right. It doesn't pull them, so to speak. It just directs the turns. If they get caffeine, they go 30% faster.
Well, I know I do. I go 30% faster.
But here's the thing. These are going to be used eventually with human sperm, and that will be used to deliver, I assume it's human, because the whole idea is to deliver fertility treatments, cancer treatments, all sorts of medicine via these robotic sperm in these little nanotubule cars.
Huh.
Trucks.
That's, wow, okay. That's,
it's creepy because
that is,
the sperm,
so that-
If they put the right chemicals on the fronts of these little cars, so to speak, that will allow them to dock with a cell, it will enable the sperm to deliver whatever, to drive whatever its payload is to the cell.
This sounds almost like that device from the X-Files. You remember toward the end of that series there where Alex Krycek, who was the nemesis of Fox Mulder, he managed to insert some sort of
Nanites
into the bloodstream of FBI Director Skinner, who was Mulder's boss.
And they could be driven from a distance.
Right, exactly, with a remote control.
Yeah.
And if
Skinner, they could be dialed up, dialed down.
Right. If Skinner didn't play ball, he would be basically killed.
I think this is moving toward that direction.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is really creepy. This is like the weaponized, this is step one towards the weaponized virus that you created for your novel,
The Armageddon Strain.
Yeah.
There are an awful lot of headlines lately that remind me of the Armageddon Strain. One of those has to do, by the way, with H5N2, which is the influenza that's going through Turkey and other fowl flocks across mm-hmm. the nation. I think last time I looked a couple of days ago, 22 states were involved. And several states have declared states of emergency so that they could get specific funding. And one state, I believe it was Minnesota, is offering free Tamiflu to any people who are going in and killing these flocks, mm-hmm. culling the flocks. If they develop any symptoms, that they will receive free treatment. Tamiflu doesn't always work against H5N2.
Right, right.
Because it's been used in Asia for the last decade to help treat it, because that's where H5N2 and H5N1 have been taking off. Now, if you're sitting there going, yeah, but she said H5N2, that's not H5N1. Let me just warn you, the hemagglutinin protein, the H, is what infects you. The N has other jobs, but the H allows it to get into your cell. So the hemagglutinin H5 is the one that infects humans and pigs and chickens, fowl. I don't know if it infects dogs and horses, it might. But we do know that humans who are around chickens, pigs, or both have contracted H5N1 and H5. The very H5 that's in the H5N2 is the one that's going here, is the same one that's been killing people in Asia for 10 years. Mm. I just read an article at Recombinomics, which is Dr. Henry Nyman, who knows his stuff forward and backwards, could and probably does teach classes on this, knows far more than I will ever know about influenza and how it works. And he believes that this is the very same hemagglutinin. It's a sub-strain that I believe was 2.2.3.4. They number these so that if you think of all the H5s as one big strain, okay, anything that varies slightly by a mutation is given a series of numbers. So it's a way of identifying them. This is the very same one that's been killing people in Asia. So he believes we are going to see, if we don't already have it going on and it's simply unrecognized, that we will see humans becoming infected with this H5N2.
That's a disturbing thought, because again, this is already through half the states, and really the states in the center of the country that are producing these, well, turkey and chicken, which is a lot of the protein that we Americans consume.
Yeah. Now, in the Armageddon strain, mine was H5N1 that had been crossbred with Ebola. So a gene from Ebola that causes the hemorrhagic component was inserted into an H5N1 to the point where it actually expressed symptoms. And that's what the disease in the beginning of the Armageddon strain is. In many ways, that's the MacGuffin. Because it's really the excuse to vaccinate everybody, and I think that's where we're going to go. I suspect that if we do, and I believe we will see cases of human H5N2 infections, that very soon we will have government agencies, especially those who are in Obamacare.
Yeah, yeah.
It will be a requirement, because we've already got this conversation going on about measles. And how dare you be a non-vaxxer? These anti-vaxxers are dangerous.
And whooping cough, pertussis.
Yes. Yeah.
Which, interestingly, I saw an article the other day. I didn't read it deeply because, again, the science is right at the limits of my comprehension. Science, boring. but it blames the outbreak of pertussis on a change that was made in the vaccine a few years back. So that it's not the lack of, it's not the unvaccinated who are causing a problem. It's those who've been vaccinated with a version of the vaccine that was somehow modified.
Yeah, well, something similar happens with measles. I mean, the measles outbreak in New York a few years ago began among people who had been vaccinated.
Well,
So anyway, yeah, there you go.
The biggest story of the day, of course, is the overnight earthquake in Nepal that as of our recording this, which is about lunchtime here in the Central Time Zone on Sunday, April 26th, is reported to have killed over 2,200 people, not just in Nepal, but also in neighboring nations, India. Tibet, Bangladesh, India. A number of mountain climbers on Everest were killed because base camp there was just overwhelmed by a massive avalanche triggered by this, 7.3, 7.4, it was over magnitude 7 quake.
Yeah, so, I've even seen as high as 7.8. Sorry, I'm squirming around. My back's starting to bother me.
Yeah, these chairs aren't designed for, you know, long-term sitting. But the main city in Nepal, which houses over a million people, is Kathmandu. And that is one of the poorest nations in the world, and building codes there until recent years have been non-existent, and the codes that they do have are not overly strong, even though it's on an area where three tectonic plates come together and they're always at risk of a big quake. They haven't been able to afford to build in accordance in a way that would reduce the number of injuries here. So there are people who are being pulled out of the rubble. So your prayers for the people who are affected by this, and people who, the rescue teams that are going to be sent there, no doubt, saw that USAID has already promised a team to go over there. And, you know, every time I see USAID, and I hate to do it in connection with a story like this, because any help, I'm sure, right now is needed desperately, regardless of where it comes from. But it's well known that USAID is a cutout of the Central Intelligence Agency.
Sure.
So, but again, regardless of where the aid comes from right now, it's critical because they're still literally pulling people from underneath piles of bricks.
Right. Well, to be honest, I can understand if I were a spy, I would want to use whatever means possible to get into the locale where I needed to do my spying. So I can see where an aid organization would provide that.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of earth changes, that ash cloud from the volcano in Chile.
Yes.
The Calbuco volcano is now reached Brazil and is starting to interfere with aircraft flight paths. This erupted without any warning. Now, unlike what happened in Kathmandu, because actually experts there have been expecting something like this for a while, and there was a conference in Kathmandu just a week ago where experts got together to try to come up with some kind of a plan. What do we do when this eventually hits? Because not only are our building codes poor, but they've got a cultural tradition there. And actually, I guess it's a legal precedent that inheritance must be split among all surviving sons. And so if you've got a house and you've got three sons, well, they'll typically divide the house up, and then you start getting into space issues. So you start adding stories onto your house, which aren't always done with any kind of construction expertise,
right,
or, you know, good materials or whatever. So you've got a lot of really flimsy and rickety buildings in that area. So just a week ago, experts were there talking about this. But in Chile, no warning whatsoever. And southern Brazil now is, again, seeing some of the ash from this cloud. You saw the video. I've not seen this yet, but when this cloud erupted, there's video taken of it that's just real spectacular, the lightning and thunder, and then the shape of the cloud that came out of the mountain.
There was a shape that came out made of smoke that looked sort of humanoid, and they're calling it the god of the volcano.
Hmm.
And the locals, I'm told, I should say, some of them believe that the god of volcano was a sign to them that this is why it erupted. The last eruption of this volcano was 40 years ago. So it's been pretty quiet since then, and I think it took a lot of the volcanologists by surprise. It shouldn't take anyone who's looked at scripture, at Bible prophecies by surprise, because we're told that there will be earthquakes and wars, and as we get closer and closer to the return of Christ in the final 7 years of God's dealings with fallen man,
mm-hmm,
that we would see an uptick in earthquakes and volcanoes. It's pretty clear if you take a look at the descriptions of what takes place in the book of Revelation that volcanoes are going off all over the place. For one thing, you lose a third of the sun and a third of the moon's light,
mm-hmm,
and that could be due to stratospheric smoke that has gone up so high it's actually blocking out the sun.
Mm. Yeah, I just while you're talking, just pulled up a picture of
Oh, the god of the volcano?
Yeah, and I can see why some would look at this and say, oh, yeah, that's because it does have a roughly humanoid appearance. There's
sort
a discernible,
of like a genie coming out of a bottle.
There's a discernible, basically discernible torso, left arm, head, face, nose. I'll put a picture of this in the show notes.
Yeah.
This will probably be the featured image on the post, but yeah. It is pretty spectacular.
Well, we talked about this a bit this morning. We were covering Exodus this morning, the section where God appears to Moses and to the people of Israel on Mount Sinai. And a lot of the descriptors there are reminiscent of volcanic eruptions. And
yeah.
There are some researchers, both Christian and non-Christian, who believe that indeed Mount Sinai may have been a volcano.
Mm-hmm.
So who knows?
Yeah, it's
at the very least, it appeared to be one.
Mm-hmm.
It acted like one. And if you believe that a volcano is a portal to another world, to the underworld, to the abyss, then when these entities come out of them, and there are stories all over the world about entities that come out of mountains.
Yeah, the idea in the cosmology of the ancient Near East of a holy mountain was common. Baal was the principal deity of the Canaanite pantheon, supposed to be the son of Dagon or son of El in some other versions of it, but Baal was the most energetic and aggressive of the Canaanite gods. The thing that surprised us as we were studying last week and this week is that Baal was also worshipped in Egypt, and that the Israelites, as they were fleeing from Israel, you know, here, take all our jewelry, our silver, and our stuff, now just get out. Then, of course, Pharaoh, as you know the story, changed his mind. And the Egyptian military, the crack troops of the ancient Near East with their chariots, which they inherited, by the way, from the Semitic Hyksos,
mm-hmm.
who introduced the compound bow and other things that the Egyptians then put to really good use in conquering the whole ancient Near East, started chasing them across the desert. And God told the Israelites, and this is a part of the story that I never remembered hearing or reading before. God told Moses, tell the Israelites, turn back. He made them turn around.
Turn toward the guy who's chasing you.
Exactly. Turn back. And then at a place called Pi Hahiroth, which is between Migdol, which means watchtower, and Baal Zephon. There is where they made the crossing of the Red Sea. And Baal Zephon is a reference to Mount Zaphon. Zaphon means north. And it is associated with a Mount Zaphon, now called Mount Acra, which is in northern Syria. It's on the coast, just a few miles south of the Turkish border. It was north of the ancient city of Ugarit, which was sort of the center of this culture back in the day.
But this is not where they were in Syria.
No.
Just the person who may only casually be listening.
Right.
We're not saying they were in Syria.
No, absolutely not. But the point is there was a place in Egypt on the coast of the Red Sea called Baal Zephon, which means Lord of the North. And again, reference to that mountain where Baal was supposed to hold court over his divine council. And right there at this place in Egypt devoted to Baal is where God, and Baal, by the way, not just being a storm god, but also the god with mastery over the sea and maritime trade and all this other stuff. God not only crushed Egypt, and if you read Exodus 12:22, it also says God, Yahweh, executed judgments on all the gods of Egypt.
Which was the whole reason for crossing the sea the way they did.
Exactly.
That was an in-your-face to anybody who believed in Zaphon.
Yes.
Baal Zaphon as mm-hmm. being the ruler of the sea.
And the ruler...
God said, no, I rule the sea.
Yes, he did it right there at a site dedicated to this. And of course he knew, Yahweh did, that Baal would be one of a thorn in the side of the Israelites for centuries to come, because this was what, about 1500 BC, 1400 mm-hmm. BC. You skip ahead to the time of Elijah around 800 BC. So, you know, 600 years later, Elijah is still having to confront the prophets of Baal.
Yep.
But the idea, again, is that this was a fight between deities. This was a fight between supernatural beings in the heavenlies, and the message to the people on the ground, those of us operating in the natural realm, it's like, you think this mountain is sacred to Baal, and you think that Baal has control over the sea? Watch this. Right in front of his holy place and on his home turf, I'm going to crush not only the Egyptian army, but execute judgment on the gods of Egypt. Then we're going to go to the Holy Land, and we're going to put the smackdown on Baal and all the other false gods there. The concept of the holy mountain is something that comes up again and again in the Old Testament, too.
And you're writing a piece for next Skywatch TV magazine.
Yeah, on yeah. This. And I'm actually going to link to the article that Chris Putnam wrote, because it's much more in-depth and goes into the scholarship much better than I'm qualified to do. But it's a concept, in the interest of cutting this short, too late. Leave it at this. The idea of the holy mountain is woven through the whole New Testament, and the final battle at Armageddon, which we always thought was, you know, Valley of the Mount of Megiddo. Mm-hmm. Well, there's no mountain at Megiddo. It's in a plain. Is mistranslated. Instead of Har Megiddo, it should be Har Moed, which means the Mount of Assembly. The Mount of Assembly is Zion,
right?
Jerusalem. Armageddon is the battle for God's holy mountain, Zion.
Well, and that may explain why we're seeing a ramping up, and Jesus told us in advance to expect increased earthquakes and natural, you know, disasters and things like that, and that there would be wars and rumors of wars. Mm-hmm. Maybe the very wars he was speaking about weren't necessarily just human wars, but that there would be a ramping up of the supernatural war that is taking place in the spiritual realm,
yeah.
And that God is still proving that these little gods, this false fallen pantheon, are not in control of Earth.
Mm-hmm.
It is the final means to wiping them out, and mm-hmm. by allowing them to have more and more control, it's not like he's drawing them into a trap once yeah. again, just yeah. like at Baal Zephon.
Yeah, yeah, because that was the whole point. You know, he God was going to do what he was going to do with the in the spirit realm, but he had to draw the physical agents, the Egyptian army, into a trap, and by turning them around at this point, you know, Pharaoh's going to think that they're stuck between a rock and a hard place, you know, mm-hmm. between the devil and the deep blue sea, as it were. And that was what drew Pharaoh into that trap and caused the destruction of the Egyptian army. Anyway, just the whole point being of this long rant, and forgive me, because when I get excited about something, I tend to talk about it a lot to the point of driving people around me nuts. But it just is another example of how the supernatural battle is in the Bible if we look deeply enough. So, and again, I'll put a link to that article by Chris Putnam about the Old Testament references to the cosmic mountain in the show notes at PIDradio.com.
Well, since we're talking about wars in the heavens and things that take place in the stratosphere and above, I'm going to go to the next story, which is from space.com. And the headline is Mysterious X-37B Military Space Plane to Fly Again Next Month.
Interesting.
Our old friend, the old X-37B.
Wasn't that the one that flew for like an entire, stayed aloft for an entire year?
Or more. And nobody knew why it was up there. Well, it's going back up, and we still don't know why it's going up there.
Huh.
It's going to blast off on, let me see if I can find the date, May 20th from Cape Canaveral.
X-37B Space Modulator. No, that's... Yeah.
If only they were that innocuous, but I suspect yeah. that there is a darker vision for this instrument.
Well, interestingly, as NASA, at the same time as the U.S. Air Force gets ready to launch this plane, is adding staff to its team of alien hunters, basically.
Yeah.
It's an initiative called Nexus for Exoplanet System Science, or NEXSS, includes scientists from 10 universities, and in conjunction with this, NASA setting up a website for the public called Planet Hunters, which will allow anybody to, you know, just us lay people to examine data from the Kepler Space Telescope, which in the last 6 years has found over 1,000 exoplanets, planets orbiting distant stars. And the idea is that they believe they keep pointing this telescope at these exoplanets that someday they'll find evidence of alien life. And interestingly, there was an article at Slate Magazine this past week, and that's how I stumbled on this thing about NASA and the alien hunters. Slate, the author of the piece, argued that conservative Christians, creationists, are praying that we never find such evidence because it would destroy our worldview. It would destroy our faith. And it was especially this piece directed at the Discovery Institute. But in general, it applies to any Christian who believes in the idea of creation or intelligent design, because they, our author of the piece argued, if we found evidence of a genuine extraterrestrial, our whole you know, the concept that we were created in the image of God would be crushed, and so the Bible would be proven untrue, and we would, you know, have no purpose.
Well, you know, if you want to see a film that takes a look at that whole dynamic, watch Prometheus.
Mm-hmm.
This is a prequel to the Alien series,
right?
And it has to do with an archaeologist scientist, a female, who's sort of the Sigourney Weaver of the piece. She is a Christian. Her father was a missionary, and he died, strangely enough, of Ebola. So it sort of, even though it takes place in the late 21st century, it rings true of things that are going on now in the world. He left his cross to her, so she carries it and wears it throughout most of the film. They find evidence in earthen caves that we were seated. In fact, the very opening shot of the film shows an alien who looks very much like an Nephilim.
Yeah, yeah.
This gigantic human who comes down and consumes something that degrades him into just DNA and
component parts.
Yeah. The amino acids or whatever go out into the oceans of the world and seed them. And from that, humans are derived, and the humans want to go and find their makers.
Yeah. And that's a meme that's been in a lot of films. That Gary Sinise movie about Mars was the same way. Was it Red
this
Planet?
This one very directly, though, confronts the idea of a Christian being faced with that.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, you're right. And, you know, again, the correct understanding of the verses in Genesis 1 that say we were created in the image of God is not that God is a humanoid biped, but that we are his imagers. We are his moral agents on earth.
Right.
We serve in the same capacity on earth, roughly, that he serves over all of creation. That's the idea. So if somehow a Zeta Reticulan lands on the White House lawn, a genuine extraterrestrial lands, that doesn't change the fact that we are still his imagers, God's imagers on this earth.
Yes.
And the Bible doesn't preclude the possibility that perhaps God created Zeta Reticulans as his imagers for Zeta Reticuli.
But I don't expect a Zeta Reticulan to land on the White House lawn and say, "Hi there." I think he will say, "Hi there, I'm the one who seeded your planet."
Yeah. Yeah. And if that's the case, then you'd be pretty sure that he's not extraterrestrial, he's interdimensional.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
It's a cookbook.
Yeah. It's sort of connected to that idea. I want to talk about the next story that I found at techradar.com. It's a story about a new software program that will allow us to resurrect our loved ones. Project Elysium.
I saw that too. I was going to talk about that today too, so I'm glad you spotted that.
The hardware and software behind virtual reality is improving at a rapid rate, the story says, and that opens up brand new possibilities. This is all about virtual reality and a way of taking all of the information that Ray Kurzweil would have about his dad and recreating his father in silica, in a computer program, so that he could sit and interact with his father. This is similar to what, since we're talking about movies, if you've ever seen the original Superman where with Christopher Reeve, and he is interacting with his father via a software program. His father's been long dead, but he's able to ask him questions and learn things from him through this software program that is based on crystal technology. These take place at the Fortress of Solitude up north. The King of the North.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That meme again.
Yes.
That meme again. Anyway, this is a program that exists now.
Well, the program is developed by a company in Adelaide, Australia called Paranormal Games. Online paranormalgames.com.
And they're going to introduce it to the Oculus VR.
Right. The Oculus Rift virtual reality glasses that you put on and immerse you into this.
Well, this is calling it the Oculus VR. What is this? Is the Jam? Yeah, the mobile VR Jam. Is that an event or is that a device?
I would think that is the mobile VR Jam, I think, is an event. All that we know really about this.
Yes, it is. It's an event.
All that we know about this game, because the company hasn't released any information yet, comes from their Twitter account, and I'm not seeing anything at their Twitter account.
It's not much.
At this point, it may just be vaporware.
Yes, true. But the
point is that they're putting it out there. And the technology is not that far-fetched.
No.
It really isn't that far-fetched. They just may be the first ones out there. Maybe this is their way of trying to recruit some venture capital funding. But the idea that there are, because you're right, you mentioned Dr. Ray Kurzweil. This is exactly what he wants to try to do.
Yes.
Except that Kurzweil wants to then take his father's DNA, exhume his father's body, take his father's DNA, and then clone his father. He doesn't just want a virtual reality version of his father. That's just the first step.
Right.
Kurzweil wants a flesh and blood dad.
And he does not want to himself die. So he wants to become the flesh and blood new version, endless version, eternal version of himself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So Project Elysium is the first step toward that. And again, this Oculus VR Jam 2015 is coming. So far, they've shown a couple of screenshots, but that's really all that we know about this program. But again, this is a direction that we're going. I think there will be quite a demand for this. If there wasn't, because there's a demand for mediums like, John Edward? I haven't seen him on television for a while, but that mm-hmm. was a real hot show on Sci-Fi for a while, where he would talk to the dead for people.
Yeah.
And either he's really good at cold reading people, which is how a lot of fakers convince people that they're actually getting messages from beyond, or he's getting messages from beyond, from somewhere beyond.
Yeah.
But not, we suspect, with some confidence, not from the dear departed loved ones that he claims to be talking to.
And that gets into the idea that I believe is possible, and that is that a computer might prove to be, an artificial intelligence might prove to be a fit extension for possession.
Yeah. Yeah, which makes sense, because the human brain is essentially an electrochemical
mm-hmm.
device.
Right.
And we know, as Christians, that it can be overpowered by an external entity, perhaps overriding the circuitry or the electromagnetic patterns that create the human brain. Why could they not do the same with an electromagnetic device, a CPU, a computer?
Here's a chilling thought. What if someone sat down and programmed Jesus Christ as an AI?
That wouldn't surprise me.
I'm going to put in everything I know about Jesus Christ, everything he said, everything he did, everything, you know, what I believe he would do today, how mm-hmm. he would respond to questions today, and created a program.
That wouldn't surprise me at all.
It wouldn't surprise me either, and I don't know why I never thought of it until now. And in fact, it wouldn't surprise me now that I think of it, if it actually already exists.
Mm-hmm. So the thing that I think is really curious is, because I followed through the article from, because this is also being, this article about Project Elysium is not only reported at the Daily Mail, but it you found it where? TechCrunch?
Yeah.
So you found it at TechCrunch. I found it at the Daily Mail.
Yeah, it's all over the place, apparently.
Yeah, and I followed the link from the Daily Mail through to their Twitter account. Their Twitter account only has 54 followers. They've only tweeted 36 tweets.
I think I'm one of their followers.
My Twitter account has like over 5,000 tweets or something like that, and considerably more followers than Project Elysium.
Mm-hmm.
Why, then, is a small-scale startup in Australia with only 50 followers in its Twitter account getting worldwide coverage?
Yeah. Yeah, good question.
Yeah.
Really good question.
Who's behind the media blitz on this? Personalized VR afterlife experience, reuniting people with loved ones who have passed.
By the way, Elysium is heaven, essentially. There's this idea that the fields of Elysium.
Yeah, and that looking for a quick definition here, because
it's referenced in a lot of.
Okay, reference to the Elysian fields in ancient Greece, concept of the afterlife developed over time. By certain Greek religious and philosophical sects and cults. So again, it's essentially a pagan concept of
of the afterlife.
Initially separate from the realm of Hades, this is from the Book of Knowledge, aka Wikipedia. Admission was reserved for mortals related to the gods and other heroes. Mortals related to the gods and other heroes. Hmm. Elysium, mortals related to the gods.
Exactly.
Interesting name. So again, yeah, this is getting some interesting traction, considering that this startup, and I'm not familiar with any of the games that they've published, and what I'm seeing here on their website, paranormalgames.com, Okay, the top game on their list is Flappy Ears. Take flight as Prime Minister of Australia Tony Abbott and dodge the spiky pillars using only the sheer flapping power of his giant ears.
That's quite a goal for them to set for themselves, to go from flappy ears to recreating a human being.
Yeah, then they've got another game called Dead Kitty Racket. You hit dead kittens with a racket. And then the third game is Gargula Blood Rush, a 2D arcade game that throws you into a retro-style world of horror and gore. Those are the three games, and suddenly they're supposed to jump from this to making a realistic VR simulation of your dear departed loved ones.
Well, keep an eye on that group to see what's going on with them.
Yeah, it really seems bizarre.
Well, let's see what else is going. Fleet of drones could have artificial brains based on honeybees.
Oh, is this Project Locust?
Don't know if it's that or not.
Because the U.S. Navy's been testing out something new. They've got a drone that's launched from something like a mortar. Basically, you drop it down into this tube, and it kind of shoots out with a poof, and then the wings pop out.
I think that's exactly drone. What this is.
Yeah, but the U.S. Navy is testing a computer program that would guide a swarm of these to a target. It would overwhelm the target by sheer numbers, or could be used to defend a Navy vessel by, again, overwhelming attackers with sheer numbers. But it's called Project Locust, which I think is intriguing.
That's really intriguing when you take a look at what we're told some of those battles in the final years of this Earth will be.
Exactly, yes. So that is, swarming like a swarm of bees or
locusts
to overwhelm a target. There was an interesting development this past week, and this kind of relates to the idea of the transhumanist idea that human life is inherently flawed and needs to be improved and upgraded. In other words, we don't have any special value just because we are created as God's imagers, created in the image of God. Our value only relates to our utility or to the quality of life that we hold, and therefore we need to do everything we can to upgrade it and enhance it and extend it as long as possible.
I think self-directed evolution.
I think that's kind of the interesting thing too. You know, life is nasty, brutish, and short. It's lousy, and yet I want to live as long as I possibly can. Mm-hmm. Anyway, the idea of human exceptionalism, which is based on the idea that that human life is sacred, is being challenged. Not just by atheists, by transhumanists, but now also in courts of law. In the state of New York this past week, a judge issued a writ of habeas corpus for two chimpanzees at the University of Stony Brook that are being part of biomedical experimentation.
Claiming that they've been unlawfully detained.
Right. A writ of habeas corpus requires the detaining authority. Usually it's used in the case of a human who's been arrested. And a judge issues a writ of habeas corpus saying, look, this guy hasn't been charged yet. You need to present what habeas corpus means, present the body. Mm-hmm. You need to present this person in court and show cause as to why this person's been arrested or let him go.
Right. Body of evidence.
Yeah. Now, under New York law, writ of habeas corpus can only be applied to a legal person in the state of New York, which implies then that the judge has determined that these chimpanzees are persons for the benefit of protection under the law that are guaranteed to human persons, that they are granted civil rights because they are persons. The idea of human exceptionalism is being pushed by this idea of personhood, that personhood could be extended to any entity, natural or artificial, on the basis of a certain minimum level of cognition. Chimpanzees, dolphins, Sam T. Dachshund, or an artificial intelligence, perhaps, could be extended civil rights because they are persons.
Which is what Bicentennial Man is all about.
Yes. The ugly flip side of this coin, however, is that it means that there are also non-person humans.
Yes.
Children below a certain age, whom a court may determine are not self-aware, or people who have cognitive disabilities, or people who've suffered severe head trauma.
Yeah.
Terry Schindler Schiavo, you may remember that case from some years back. A judge allowed her to be dehydrated to death because she's in a vegetative state, and so we'll just withdraw water and let her dehydrate to death, which is a horrible way to die. But she was not entitled to protection under the law in this personhood theory because she wasn't really a person. Because she's not, you know, the fact that she's human is irrelevant. She's not a person. Yet these chimpanzees
are persons.
Yeah. Now, Wesley J. Smith, who broke this story, followed up and said that the judge retracted the writ of habeas corpus and yet still wanted the folks at Stony Brook University to show cause why the chimpanzee should be held. Now, what that means legally, I mean, that's weird. Somebody probably whispered in the judge's ear and said, do you realize you're going to go down in history as the one that said chimpanzees and animals are entitled to human rights?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, no, human rights, not human rights anymore. Civil rights.
Yes.
Because human is not, we're just meat computers.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And because we can think, well, we're entitled to some rights, but as soon as you're no longer able to think, and then next it'll be, no, when you're no longer productive, you're just a useless eater. That's the direction it's going. And it is disturbing that here in 2015, it seems like this kind of thing is just speeding up.
We're moving toward a classed society where you have humans and non-humans, persons and non-persons, and the non-persons will lose.
I was shocked to learn that in the state of Texas, they have something called futile care theory, which is now embodied in law. And their legislature, they're trying to change this, but futile care means that if a doctor determines that continuing medical treatment is futile, mm-hmm. you're never going to get better, the doctor can say, I'm not going to continue treatment.
And so people who are in vegetative states for 10 years, they're,
right.
nothing can, exactly. all we're doing is keeping them breathing.
Right. We'll pull the plug and let them dehydrate to death. We're not killing them. Yeah, right. Well, you know, remember in fact, we covered this morning in the Book of Exodus study, Thou Shalt Not Murder. The word translated as murder actually means to allow human life to end, to allow death to occur through negligence or through carelessness.
Through cunning. And yeah. through cunning.
Well, and through cunning.
Which is how we generally think of murder, but this is through failing to act.
Exactly. So whether through action or inaction, if you allow a human death to occur. So this is something that God is very much against and opposed to.
Yes.
But again, under personhood theory, well, this person's not productive. They're not really a person. They're not thinking. So we can just withdraw care. Now, as I understand the law in Texas, a family can argue, challenge this. And then there's a tribunal that will meet at the hospital. And if this tribunal of medical professionals determines that, no, the care, continuing care is futile,
mm-hmm.
they will then refuse to administer care, even if the family finds another doctor who's willing to administer the care.
This is the very thing that was discussed in the early days of the Affordable Care Act legislation. This idea of so-called death panels.
Death panels.
People who are not in any way involved, many of them not even medical professionals, who simply look at the numbers and say, no, this is a waste of money.
Exactly. Yeah. And the people who brought it up, like, former Alaska guest, Sarah Palin, we're called nuts.
Oh, yeah.
They were, this is crazy. Well, no, it's already the law. And I was surprised to see it in Texas because Texas is a little more conservative than most of the rest mm-hmm. of the country. But this is coming. And it's closer to us than we think. In Canada now, euthanasia is considered a constitutional right. And there are medical professional organizations in Canada that are arguing that doctors should not be allowed to object. To conscientiously object and refuse to participate in assisted suicide.
What a world.
Yeah. So doctors very soon, nurses very soon may have to choose between their career and their conscience.
Well, speaking of medicine, there's another story that came out this past week about a new malaria vaccine.
Hmm.
Malaria is it's an infection by
transmitted through mosquito bites, right?
It is. It's actually something that lives in your body. It's not a virus, is what I'm trying to say.
Okay.
You're the host to this.
Yeah.
And that's why malaria comes in waves. You'll get it again and again and again. It's whenever this entity, this thing is, I'm sorry, I'll find it here in a minute, word gone. But this vaccine has been in the works for about 10 years, and it is financed, not surprisingly, by the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation.
Yeah.
And it uses an adjuvant, probably squalene or something like that. And it's the adjuvant that irritates the immune system into responding with lots and lots of T cells and B cells and things like that. The theory is that if you call out all the troops because of the adjuvant, they're all running out because of that invader, then they'll just happen to come across the real thing you want to protect your body against and fight against it. I don't know that there's real proof that adjuvants work that way, but they definitely can leave your body with autoimmune disorders.
Yes, which is why they seem to be so much more prevalent today than they were 50 years ago.
Right. Well, this is on the fast track to be approved this year. It's the RTS,S vaccine, and it is going to be given to children. Mm. It was tried in infants on up. And I think from 3 months on up, it doesn't do terribly well after a time. You have to have booster after booster after booster.
Yes.
And then even after the fourth booster, over a period of time, that protection will wear off. So this is going to be a guaranteed moneymaker for a long time to come.
It's a whole new market. Now, they're talking
because
about
this isn't a choice. The Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, if the United States goes into a country and says, look, we're going to do the following things for you economically, but you have to allow us to protect your people from malaria and things like that, because we just want to help. And so the foundation will pay for the drugs, but it's the people, the children and the mothers and the dads who in African nations will be required to take this.
Malaria used to be a problem in certain parts of the United States, because there are some parts of the United States that used to be swampy enough and warm enough long enough of the year that the mosquitoes that transmit the malarial bacterium that would flourish. So, you know, down in the southeastern United States, Florida, Georgia, South Georgia, you used to, and I'm talking like, you know, Civil War time, you know, 100 years ago or more, malaria was a problem. But then we discovered DDT, and we essentially eradicated, or at least knock down, the population of mosquitoes far enough that malaria here in the United States is not really an issue anymore. Mm-hmm. And yet, when it comes to Africa, no, we'll send the mosquito nets.
Parasitic. Well, that's the word I wanted. Okay. Parasitic. It's a protozoan.
Okay. All right. It's so it's not a bacterium. It's a protozoan. Right. Okay. But it kills 2 million, if I remember the statistics correctly, something like 2 million children under the age of 5 every year in Africa.
That's what we're told, yeah.
Yeah. But no, we can't let them use DDT because
it'll hurt the birds.
Even though that's been proven to be a lie.
Right.
But it does create a whole new market for big pharma. Speaking of big pharma, by the way, a paper published this week, another gateway, another door has been opened. Chinese researchers have effectively changed the genetic structure of a human embryo, or a number of human embryos,
yes,
using the CRISPR-Cas9 technique.
Mm-hmm.
This is the first time that this has ever happened. Now, the Chinese researchers, who are somewhat sensitive to the criticism that, hey, wait a minute, this is bad, because these changes, this is not like genetic therapies for grown-ups, where you know, there are some therapies that will that will use RNA, and I'm speaking way over my head here because I don't really understand the science, but this is the first time where the germline has been changed.
Right. This is no longer therapeutic only. This is actually changing the line from here on out.
Right. If the embryo, any of these embryos were brought to term and then had children themselves, those children would inherit the genetic changes that were made whether good or bad. And researchers are saying, you know, some critics are saying, hey, this needs to stop right now.
It's way too early in the CRISPR-Cas9 system to know what the longitudinal effects will be.
Yeah. So the Chinese researchers said, well, we were using embryos that were not viable. They were never going to be brought to term, and so on and so on. Now, transhumanists, and I had a conversation just the other night, and this will be the interview posted tonight on A View from the Bunker, with the president and founder of the Mormon Transhumanist Association. They're very optimistic about this technique. They want to find ways to change embryos prior to birth to enhance our capabilities. And you can understand where they're coming from, because if we can eliminate genetic diseases, and this particular technique this particular experiment in China was targeting a blood disorder that is potentially fatal. You know, why wouldn't we do that to try to improve the overall health of our children and our grandchildren and so forth? The problem with that is it's just a short step from there to saying, well, why shouldn't we increase the IQ of our children by 25%?
Exactly. And why shouldn't we want taller children, stronger children?
Right. And for the military, why wouldn't we want guys who are impervious to pain or don't need sleep or can eat?
You know, if we
can
make
little.
Him 9 feet tall and just super muscled, that would be great.
Exactly. So that's where all of this is leading. They've crossed the Rubicon. They have effectively changed the genetic makeup of humans. Now, they've destroyed these embryos. They said, oh, well, they were about to be destroyed anyway. That we were told. But one of the other things that researchers in this field are afraid of is that China right now, according to one guy, is like the wild, wild west of genetic engineering. And we don't know what really is going on. This is just a paper that was peer-reviewed and published. What's going on in labs where they're not bothering to publish what they're doing?
Well, there are shops setting up all across the country and the world that sell CRISPR-Cas9 kits that will target specific genes. So this could very easily get into very dangerous territory.
How expensive are these kits? I mean, this is something that we could do in our brand new shop building?
I assume if you've got money behind you, you can afford it. They may be $1,000 or more. I don't know what the kits cost. But I've seen them offered at various websites.
Yeah. Well, again, we're into a brave new world. Mm-hmm. Again, the fact that we've been created in the image of God and that just the very fact that we are human is no longer enough to consider our lives sacred and to consider the way God has created us. I mean, you know, the Bible tells us we are wonderfully and fearfully made, but those that have rejected God and his authority are saying, yeah, we can do better.
What arrogance.
Yeah.
Arrogance.
Use your own dirt.
Yeah. Well, we are very excited to be here at Skywatch TV in the audio booth recording PID Radio. And all of this week, Derek will be, are you going to be interviewing anybody more? Are you going to be doing the daily news updates?
Daily news updates. Sadly, because of the time constraints, I didn't have an opportunity to sit down with Chris Putnam while he was here and talk about the forthcoming book, On the Path of the Immortals.
Well, there was time, but we're just on the other side of the studio itself, yeah. The TV studio, so we had to be relatively quiet while Steve Quayle was taping with Tom Horn in there. So lots of cool things are coming up. We hope that you're watching Skywatch TV mm-hmm. on the CTN network, the Christian Television Network on Dish and DirecTV. You can also get it on Roku now.
Mm-hmm. And directions on how to do that, how to add the Roku channel, the Skywatch TV Roku channel to your account is available at the Skywatch TV website, skywatchtv.com.
Yep, you can also watch it at YouTube, and a lot of these set-top boxes allow you to go to YouTube. Roku boxes do. Mm-hmm. You can go to the YouTube account and just save it on your PC, or you can search online. You subscribe to us, and you'll get emails when we update the account and put up new videos, and the new show each week mm-hmm. will go up the day after it's shown on CTN.
Yeah.
So Wednesday morning, it should be up there.
Right. And there's also a podcast now, which you can subscribe to. You'll find that in the top tab at skywatchtv.com. So if you just want to listen to the audio, if sitting in front of a television for, you know, the 5 or 10 minute update or the 30 minute show is not fitting into your schedule, you can just grab the audio and listen to that
in your car.
Yeah. So, we're trying to make it as easy to get that information out as we can, just as we've been doing with View from the Bunker, PID Radio, for the last, 10 years now.
Over 10 years.
Do you know that we passed our 10th anniversary on this program and we didn't even mark it?
I know it. It was in March. We were so busy doing other things. So we're now in our 11th year.
Isn't that incredible?
Yeah. Praise God. He has been so good to us, and you guys have been so good to us, you know, praying for us and sending us your feedback. It just means the world to us. And those of you who have been able to help us financially, we love it. Yeah. You know, we wouldn't be able to do this without you, but honestly, we don't require that of anybody. We don't expect it of anybody.
Right.
We want these things to be free for everybody to enjoy and maybe learn a little bit from and maybe to get a laugh here and now and then, or just to hear Sam's, you know, snores.
Sonorous snoring in the background, yes. Well, and that's the thing, because the reason we laugh is not because we don't take these topics seriously, because we do.
Otherwise,
we'd be doing other things. I'd be, you know, focusing on fantasy baseball all the time instead of, you know, these subjects, which can be very dark and depressing.
We've got lots of other things we love doing.
Yeah. I mean, you know, we could be, gardening or just watching, you know, TV or just engaged in day-to-day, you know, things of the world, things of no consequence that are, you know, lightweight, mindless,
right.
You know,
right.
we do take them seriously, but we also do not have a spirit of fear from the Lord.
No.
And the joy of the Lord, is knowing that there is a day coming when the tears of this world will be wiped away.
That's right.
And time is growing short, which just motivates us to work harder to get information to you and just pray that that congregations, churches around the country, around the world will be informed and feel the same sense of urgency to talk with friends, family members, neighbors, to witness as the Spirit opens the opportunity for you. You know, the skeptics who refuse to listen, you know, we just pray that they will be brought to the Lord. But boy, there are just so many in the churches on Sunday morning who are there going through the motions because the depth of the spiritual battle has never been made clear to them. What's really going on? The supernatural realm is real, more real than this natural realm in which we exist.
Right. That's the realm that's eternal.
That's the realm that's eternal.
All of these things are going to pass away.
Exactly. And so that's when sometimes you hear us laughing and perhaps making light in what seems to be a discussion of rather dark topics. It's not because we're trying to make light of the topics or take them lightly, but because we know that the ending, when it comes, has already been determined, and it will be the Lord who stands supreme at the end.
Amen.
So, well, thank you for joining us. We look forward to being with you again soon. We pray that this closing comes off as scheduled. And until next time, I'm Derek Gilbert.
I'm Sharon Gilbert. Bye-bye, everybody.
Thanks for listening. PID Radio is a production of the PID Radio Network, a division of Gilbert House. Please visit our website at PIDradio.com, where you'll find show notes and links to connect with us on Twitter and Facebook. We wish to thank all those who help undergird and underwrite our ministry through prayers, feedback, and donations. To contact us directly, email us at radio@peeringintodarkness.com. Opening music adapted from The Alchemist's Tower by Kevin MacLeod, www.incompetech.com. Closing music, New Day Coming by Steve Grace, stevegrace.com. Content, copyright Gilbert House, and is licensed under Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derives 3.0 Unported License. For more information, see creativecommons.org.
Gonna step up to the microphone.